their gunpoint robbery cases. These are really serious violent offenses. Also included in that category would be felon in possession of a weapon. You know, perhaps their argument is it's a nonviolent offense to be a felon who is in possession of a weapon. But it is not the case that we are going in and for a, you know, a retail theft or jumping a turnstile or for a car theft, it is not the case that we are going in and we are requesting high bails. In fact, we are going in and we are requesting no bail. This policy that we instituted in 2018, shortly after we came into office, of identifying...
We're going to leave that there. There's only a few seconds left, and we're going to move on to peace and social justice. Please stick around for that show. It's going to be a tribute to our great friend Bill Mash, Guillermo Mash. If you didn't know who he was, please stick around and listen how he spent his life in Chico serving the community. It's an inspiring life, actually, and Bill will be missed, greatly missed within the community. So I'll see you again next week. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Standing on the sacred hill, the tower where our kings found the grace to rule Ireland in the stories that we sing. Of brave good men and women's blessed bones built this land, and sweet freedom's cry is havoc as we fight the black and tan. Oh, my name is Brendan Carney, I'm a rebel from County Meath. My hand is sworn to the IRB and the wearing of the green. My men and I are on a holy quest, our blood is good and true. We're hunting down England's killers, of being arrested until we do. On we come, men of the brave brigade, rain and sun, in faith and fear, the time has come to kiss goodbye. So pack your guns and say your prayers. It's a long way from here to there. My father stood with Patrick Pierce, that eastern Dublin town, when the fires were raging everywhere as the English burned it down. From where I'm standing, I can hear the voices from New Grange and from La Crew, singing of Easter and the rising time when Ireland began anew. Now the sky is blue, the tower where we're marching from today.
This is the Peace and Justice Program. My name is Chris. I'm filling in today for Corey Himpont. We'll be back with you the first Friday of next month. And the reason I played that song from Hey Penny Bridge is because we also have lost Mark McKinnon, who was a local teacher and a wonderful musician. He's much loved in the community. And I just wanted to include our love for him and his family and his friends today on the Peace and Justice Program, as we move forward with a tribute to our friend and family member Bill Mash. I have in the studio with me Tammy Donaldson and also Bill's son Eric, and I'd like them just to say hi if they could, just a second. Let me get your mics up, guys. Hi, how are you both doing?
Hanging in there, given circumstances, I guess, as good as it can be.
Yeah, yeah, I appreciate all that covers, Eric. There's a lot of space and it's doing okayness. Mm-hmm. And Tammy, you've done so much of the support for Bill's kids during this really shocking period after Bill had his heart attack. I think it was 12 days ago, and then his loss a few days ago in the hospital. How are you holding up? How are you doing?
I don't think I know he's gone.
You don't think you...
I don't think that I know he's gone yet.
Yeah, so you're still in that shock phase.
Yeah. I don't think that it's hit me yet.
Yeah, I think that's pretty normal part of grieving.
I don't want it to.
You don't even want it to happen. You don't even want to know he's gone. I don't blame you. I don't blame you. So today I wanted to honor Bill by playing some of his clips and then also just talking about some of his work. But the thing about Bill, he was so expansive. He covered so much territory that we have to dial it in today. So what we're going to focus on is Without a Roof, which is something that he, a program that he did here on KZFR. And it aired its final show on June 24th, 2020. And that was in conjunction with Bill, which also went by Guillermo Mash's absolute retirement from the Without a Roof mission to tangibly help destitute community members while giving them a face and a voice. He deemed it a wonderful and life-changing experience since February of 2012, yet said it was time to move on to other endeavors that bring him or brought him and other community members joy. And I don't know if either of you really, I don't know who besides Bill himself really understood why he moved his emphasis in his life, but I think he was doing it to preserve something in himself and also to feed his joy, feed what kept him strong and healthy. And we're going to focus a little bit here, but I just wanted to first also let you know that his other programs here at KZFR were, of course, the Peace and Justice program, which he was a co-host with us, the Chico Vibe, which is a music show, Youth for Justice, which was incredibly close to his heart, and Imagining Community, which addressed a lot of things like environmental concerns in the community. So these are just, if you can go into his archives, I really suggest that our listeners do that because there's just so much there. And also a little bit of his history. Maybe Eric can tell us some about that, but I know that he was a former engineering program manager at Hewlett-Packard and that he retired out of that and that he had been in the military. He was a military veteran who worked on a naval submarine base in New London. What state is that, Eric?
I'm not 100% sure.
I know Connecticut?
It's probably, it's on the East Coast, somewhere in New England. That's where most of his days were before coming out here in California.
I forgot to look that up. Anyway, you know, he was just a force of nature. And I think somebody mentioned at something we went to about how he came into Chico in 2012 with just a backpack. He just kind of roared in. And so, you know, the things I wanted to say about him is that he was always curious. He genuinely loved people, and he was always honestly present in a way that made all people feel comfortable with talking to him. And this was on not just personal topics, but painful topics, and that's what some of what you're going to hear today. And I also wanted to say before I stop talking, is that I think he took on a lot of pain when he did the Without a Roof show. He never shied away from it, from being involved with people, and he never really distanced himself from people at all. And when you look at his work, you see that a lot of it was about pain. And I wanted to just quote some something from Brian Stevenson, who did death row work. He said, "We can't change the world if we are not willing to get close to those who are suffering. It's only when we get close enough to hear and see that we have any capacity to get to someplace better." The second point that Stevenson made is that traditional narratives often prevent change. He said that these perspectives need to evolve in order to create justice. He added that staying hopeful is essential to changing the world, and hopelessness is an enemy of justice. And I think for Bill, what I take from all of that is he changed the narrative in this town. He made people aware of the situation of the unhoused. He made them real. He made them people. No one had ever done that before. No one had ever just gone in there with a big grin and a big hug and, you know, and
a burrito.
And a burrito. Thank you, Tammy. And, you know, he made it real for all of us. And that's, I think, what started the ball rolling with much of the activism and advocacy that have come in our town. And so I just really wanted to, you know, lay that on us. And then also this idea of that hopelessness is an enemy of justice. You know, you have to feed your spirit. You have to go to a place of joy. And I think that's what Bill knew that he had to do. That's why he became so much involved in the culture scene, in the music scene. You know, that became very, very important to him, as well as to the work of environmentalism into protecting the earth and indigenous communities, the needs, and really stepping up. So, well, I guess I'll say one more thing. That we community hosts, a community radio host here at KZFR, love Bill. He was our volunteer of the year, I think a couple of different years running. I have in the studio with me today Grant Parks. He's sort of hovering in the background here. Grant, do you want to say anything about Bill before we play one of his clips? Okay, so he'll let that roll. But we want to open up the phone line. I'm going to play one clip, and then I'd like to open up the phone line so that other people can say what they want to say. And we want to make this something really celebratory, but also if you want to pour grief, that's okay. We'll take it because we're grieving too. And we don't know when a celebration of Bill's life will take place. The family hasn't solidified those plans that I know about. But Bill was too young to die. It was a huge shock for us that he would die at 62 years old. And he was an icon, and we just really love him and really appreciate that, you know, Eric could make it in today. And do you guys want to add anything before I put on a clip?
Let's hear what you're going to play.
I'm sorry. Speak up. Okay. There we go. All right. So let me see. I'm just going to go to this one here.
I'm Robert Jones, one of the hosts of the Peace and Social Justice Show, a program where you will learn.
So that is Robert Jones, who is another co-host of ours. But we want to, maybe Grant can help me with this, if you're still here. Can you make this play rather than that play? Thank you. I do not want that one. Okay, just one sec.
Give me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
I really believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own beds and different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth, who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty the worst form of violence. Guillermo Mash here, welcoming you to a special Without a Roof radio segment here on your community-sponsored and people-powered radio station, KZFR 90.1 FM. The propulsion for tonight's special feature was prompted by my decision to seek hot tea at Om Foods in downtown Chico late morning on New Year's Day. Om was a refreshing buzz of COVID-19 compliant activity.
I'm going to cut this one off. We had another new person come into the studio, and I just wanted to welcome her. And I'd like you to start calling in if you could, if you'd like to. The phone is open. The number is 530-895-1114, and I'll try to keep an eye sideways for your call and let you on as soon as we can. I'm just going to switch around to different cuts here, and let's see if I can get it to play this one. Wants to go back to the other one again. Here we go.
Start describing the OM Foods Pay It Forward program. Later in the show, Without a Roof visits the encampments off Pine Street at the entrance to Bidwell Park with Addison, Winslow, and Lincoln as they deliver mutual aid burritos from OM's Pay It Forward program to destitute campers. We end today's Without a Roof segment with Natalie Hansen, Chico Enterprise Record reporter, who discusses several of her recent articles on homelessness in Chico and the domestic violence that far too often permeates the reasons why women are on the street and so vulnerable. But wait, there's more. With a sneak peek of next month's The Triumph of Joy segment featuring Kizmu McCubri, local writer and creative mind at Kizmo's Corner, a multimedia production company focused on work and video production, editing, animation, story creation, and voiceover here on People Power Radio. So our premiere show tonight is featuring homeless youth and the power of a support network, and features interviews with Josh Indar and Megan Malloy from the Butte County School Ties Program, providing support services for students experiencing homelessness or residing in foster care. We're also featuring Kyle Maxson's story, which we're calling The Will to Succeed. We're also going to hear from Christy and Emily from the Homeless Emergency Action Response Team, or HART, and then details and praise for the court-ordered Special Advocates, or CASA, for foster youth. And we end our program with a raw street performance by a young man in the grip of heroin addiction. First up is Josh Indar. For folks that follow Without a Roof, we physically did a piece on Josh for Writing for Donuts. He's at a program that's run out of 6th Street on Wednesday afternoons where folks can come in and write for a donut. And he publishes books of poetry and written word. And it's a tremendous program that he's going to mention a little bit in this forthcoming piece right now. And without any further ado, here's Josh on mentoring and tutoring homeless and foster youth in Butte County. Enjoy.
Man, I would really like to know what a day in the life of a mentor looks like.
I don't know if I can give you like a day of mentoring, because that's not like all that I do. You know, I do a lot of like coordinating and a lot of tutoring. And usually the mentoring kind of comes through that, where I'll be helping out a student who needs help with school. And then you realize, like, well, this is a really smart kid. Like, how much help do they need? They need help with school, but it's also a lot of the reasons that they're maybe not doing well in school is because of what else is going on in their life. And that's kind of where the mentoring comes in for me, is talking to them about how to move forward in their life, and really just kind of being there for them to text. And usually, I mean, that's how youth are really communicating with each other, and especially with me now. I mean, phone calls are sort of things of the past, but then, you know, we'll text and we'll meet up, we'll have coffee, and really just talking. That's what mentoring is really just talking, and also trying to provide some type of role modeling in a way, you know. I just try to show that you can make it, you can have a decent life and not really give up on a lot of the things that youth, for whatever reason, feel that they need to give up on, you know, their personality or their style or whatever. A lot of youth are just afraid that they'll lose something if they, you know, if they have to square up, right? If they have to if they have to take on a square lifestyle that's not them. And I'm like, no, you don't have to do that. You know, you have to do certain things. You have to keep yourself well. You have to keep find a way to make money or, you know, to keep yourself stable or whatever, but you don't have to go so far that you lose yourself. And I think that might be what holds some kids back. I know that when I was younger and looking towards the future, it scared the hell out of me because I thought that it involved, you know, like that I would have to be someone else, but you really can't just make your way. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tried to impart.
So how many youth do you work with? I mean, in a typical day?
What's a typical day? Here is a Tuesday is that I'll go to the homeless task force meeting, right? And then I'll try to see what's going on with the community and make contacts there so that if someone asks me for resources, I'm like, oh, I just saw that person over there. We can, you know, do that. Then I have a meeting that's work-related. Then at 3 o'clock, I'll go tutor someone at the library. And then at 4:30, I'll go and tutor someone else. And then after that, I'll go home and have dinner and band practice. Like that's kind of a sort of a typical day for me. Or I'll go out to a CYC meeting, which is foster youth. That's mentoring, but it's also advocating for change within the system. So it's kind of a lot of that. Or, you know, or I'll do the writing for donuts thing every Wednesday. And, you know, sometimes there's 10 youth there, sometimes there's none.
It seems like what you're describing, you tutor most days.
Yeah, almost every day there's someone to tutor. And of course right now it's summer, so with people out of school, that slows way down. I have had school years where I'm, you know, tutoring for 4 hours out of the day, which is a little bit tough because I'm also supposed to be coordinating all of these other tutors. And then if I'm always tutoring, then I can't do that too. So I've had to sort of cut back, and it's a lot of tutoring. It's a lot of in school and after school, and, you know, I've met kids everywhere. But then, I mean, I've done tutoring under trees, you know, at hotels and, you know, trailers and wherever they are. You know, that's the thing with our program is that we will go wherever that young person is.
So when you say tutor, I hear education. I mean, is it? I would assume that it's kind of blended. So at the same time, you'll be doing a little mentoring if there's anything you need to help them with and a little bit of tutoring. Or are they separate entities? Are they separate things?
It depends on the youth. Sometimes they need a little bit more and they're good about asking for it. Other times they don't want anything but the help with their school, and it's whatever they want, and it's really dictated by their personality and their needs. You know, I do work for the Office of Education, and our focus is on education, and education is gonna be the key for a lot of these young people to get out of homeless situations, and so that is really what we focus on. As far as mentoring, I mean, the mentoring is a little bit sort of in addition to that, but we really do focus on trying to get them through school because, man, if you don't have a diploma in this economic climate, you know, you're stewed. There's so few jobs out there. You know, when I was younger, at least you could go and there was jobs that you could do without that high school diploma. Now that's a huge barrier. You know, they see that on an application and they just throw it in the trash.
My quick story, because it's a fun one, it's a short one, but I went to my guidance counselor because I hated school. It was just too boring.
Too.
I hated it. It was boring.
Yeah.
And I was going to quit and take my GED. And he talked me into graduating early so I could go in the Navy.
Uh-huh.
And when I can't remember the whole conversation because that's many, many years ago, but he really had a good point. He's like, you know, if you're going to quit on the first thing you're going to quit on of substance is high school diploma, anyone's going to be looking at you going, you know, why did you quit?
That's true. But, you know, those other options are okay, too. I mean, if you have a GED, you do have a diploma. I got out early with the Chesapeake, the California High School Proficiency Exam, because I could not handle school. I'd been through too many schools and it didn't work for me. We do also try to assess what each student is going to need and what they're capable of and how they're going to move on. Because, you know, honestly, some students have been out of school for so long, especially if they've been homeless or if they've run away. And even a lot in the foster care system, you know, that I've known kids who haven't gone to school until they're 12 years old. Or I've known kids who have dropped out of school when, you know, in sixth grade, and then they come back to high school. Man, you can't do that, you know, because you've missed so much that, you know, trying to backfill all that education while you're going to school all day, you know, something else has to happen there. So if it's the GED or the Chesapeake test or whatever it is, that's going to just get them over that barrier so they can move into the workforce or go and do whatever they want, you know, but that's got to happen because otherwise, you know, they're coming back, you know, 21 years old, no diploma, and they've forgotten most of the stuff that they've learned, and then they try to get a GED, and it's very, very hard.
I saw this at Writing at Donuts because, you know, I was kind of, I did that, you know, writing for a donut. But part of the skill set you need is really just as storytellers, because we're both storytellers. So I just see this look on your face, you know, and I saw that in Sixth Street. You know, you're like, you introduce yourself to some young person, and then you start asking them about how things are going, and then you immediately get excited when they come back. There's just this, there's a real power to that, because a lot of these kids, they don't get that positive, literal positive reinforcement. And the one question I really had around that was, so many youth that I work with, they get down on the fact that they can't do this or won't do it. But if you can work with them over a couple of weeks, kind of explaining how they can do it, that might be the first time anyone's had that level of conversation with them, which mm-hmm. is amazing.
Well, yeah, I think there's always someone in your life that's telling you that you're either going to do it wrong, or you're doing it wrong, or you're not going to make it, or you can't do things that way. And I don't think that that's really helpful. I think that a lot of younger people just need to be told that, yeah, you can do it. Try it a different way. Try it. Do it the way that you want to do it. There's also an element of sort of getting used to failure and then expecting that that's only going to happen again when, you know, failure is just a learning opportunity, and it's got to be treated that way. There's not so much space to fail, I think, that in our society, you know, there's only so many times that you can lose your grasp on that ladder before you decide that you're just not going to try to climb it again. And that, to me, is the sort of the big problem with what's going on in America right now, is that ladder is very hard to reach, and once you fall off, it's hard to get back on again. There's got to be an alternative to that, and there's got to be someone in everyone's life who says, you know, just keep trying, or trying in a different way, or, you know, let's look at this from a different perspective and see if, you know, what you were doing wrong, you can change this one little thing, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're climbing it again. There's a weird idea of success out there that is very sort of materialistic and sort of enforced by the media, where that if you don't have these specific material things, then you are a failure. And that has to just be broken down, because that's not what an authentic life is based on. You know, I think that we do have this materialistic way of looking at success in our society, and that's not what life is about. That's not what brings happiness.
I was really excited about your thoughts on, you know, long form writing and how empowering that would be to the youth that you see, versus coming in, writing a poem, and getting a donut.
I mean, I just think that telling their whole story is really transformative for a lot of these youth. And it's also like taking control of that narrative in their life is essentially taking control of their life. There's not much difference, I think, in people's life and people's stories. I mean, I love seeing poems, and I love seeing, you know, shorter stories and frivolous things. And I love everything that these youth do in the Writing for Donuts, but it's so short. They're just these tiny little fragments of this longer story. And I think that if we can get them to tell more of the full story, then it's really helpful to them, and it's also easier for the reader to understand more where kids are coming from if they see the whole story. If they see, like, oh, why are you homeless? Oh, okay, so you were kicked out of your house, or you're being abused, so you ran away, or, you know, like, you don't get that much context or detail just with a poem. However great that poem may be, it's still just this tiny, tiny little piece of the larger story. I've done some research into that. There's really like a therapeutic aspect to it. You know, taking control of that narrative in your life, you can change your own story from tragedy to triumph. You know, you can change that ending. You can change the whole way that you look at it. You know, and perspective is everything. If you look back and see your life as just one tragedy after another, you know, what are you going to have to look forward to? And what are you going to be, how is that going to affect your behavior moving forward? Whereas if you look at, oh my God, I've overcome all these things, it's so much more empowering. It's so much of a more, like, a healthier way to look at it. And it allows you to, you go from being a victim to being a hero of your own story. That's what a lot of people need.
But what I find out fascinating from what I do, Josh, just talking to youth over time, is after you get by that initial,
you know, who are you? Do I trust you? And all those little dynamics. They want to tell more of their story. And
everyone does.
Exactly. So I actually see the whole writing for donuts. It gets them interested in doing it. And now I think it's really blazingly cool that you're actually going to go, let's take it to the next step.
Yeah, no, that is what I want to do, is take it to the next step, to where we're really telling people stories and really handing that control of the narrative of their life over to them. Because you can do anything you want with it. I'm trying to remember the name of the guy who wrote Man's Search for Meaning. I think his name's Viktor Frankl, and he was in a concentration camp. And this is kind of what he learned throughout this whole horrible, horrible ordeal that he went through. Probably just the absolute worst thing you can imagine. And he comes out of it with this idea that through telling the story of it, he is actually controlling what happened and what is going to happen in the future. If we can control our own stories, we can control our own lives, and we can control how we feel about things and how much things affect us and in what way, and how much we learn and how much we grow from these experiences. Someone can go through that and come out of it with an attitude that says, you know, that they will endure and that they can find meaning from that. Then people can do that for anything.
All right. And so it is 12:01 here on the Peace and Justice program, on doing this Bill Mash special today in tribute to him and his incredible life. This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. I have in the studio with me some incredible people, but I'd like to turn to Eric Mash, his son. And Eric, do you have any reflections on that incredible early interview in 2015 with Josh Indar, and when you listen to your dad's words?
One of the things that, like, strikes me the most is...
Hang on just a sec. Okay. Go ahead. Let's see if I get you.
One of the things that strikes me the most about the interviews, especially the early on interviews, is how much passion he has behind... the people he was interviewing, and just how candidly he just talked. Like, you know, his interviews just felt like a conversation, didn't really feel like an interview at all. And especially when it comes to, like, the youth and the next generation, and, you know, he had such a deep and wholehearted passion about telling people's stories. He was a storyteller, but he was also a provider of a platform to tell a story. And, you know, Writing for Donuts was one of his major passion projects that he absolutely, like, it meant a lot to him to do that with Josh. And it meant a lot to be there for the youth, to be there for, you know, the children and the kids and, you know, everybody, the next generation. And not only was he passionate about that, like, he learned each and every person's name. Like, everybody that went into Writing for Donuts, he could probably, if you asked him today, he could tell you everybody was in that book without even looking at the book.
Right.
And that's just who my dad was.
And he was a great man. And I'm going to just have to break away and thank our underwriters. Without our underwriters and you listeners, we wouldn't be able to have this wonderful radio station that Bill Mash was so much a part of since he came to Chico in 2012. Anyway, I'd like to thank at this point Patrick Riley, a real estate professional with Century 21 Select, specializing in properties in Chico and Butte Meadows. Patrick is dedicated to helping buyers and sellers achieve their real estate goals with kind, quality service. Patrick can be reached at 530-588-6593 and on Facebook. And there's also going to be this great Charlie Robinson tribute concert on Friday, December 2nd, tonight at the Chico Women's Club. A wide range of musicians, including George Souza, Dana Olson, and Morse, gather to celebrate Charlie's 7 decades of goodwill, uplifting music, and inspired teaching. Details by visiting the Charlie Robinson Friends and Fans Facebook page. Tickets are available at Eventbrite, Pullen Cyclery, Music Connection, and doors open at 6:30, but the show's at 7. And also, since we're kind of doing these now, I'm going to do them all together. Farmstar Pizza. I want to thank Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar uses products from local farms and ranches to support community agriculture. Open every day for lunch and dinner with curbside pickup at 2359 The Esplanade in Chico. For details, find Farmstar Pizza on Facebook and at farmstarpizza.com. And also Burchard Construction, providing custom remodels, new home and commercial building from foundation to finish. Burchard Construction, where the homeowner's input matters. Custom construction with beauty and function. Bids, consultations, and employment opportunities are available at 530-864-5427 and at Burchard, B-I-R-C-H-A-R-D, construction.com. And now we're going to head back to our celebration of Bill Mash. I mean, you know, I think if you're just coming into the show, Bill Mash, I think most of our community is aware that he passed in the last few days, and that he, if you've been listening to KZFR over the years, you know how wide the scope of his programming was. But I also, today I'm focusing on his segments of Without a Roof. But there are so many friends. I wanted to make space for that. And so I hopefully... Yeah, we have somebody on the phone right now. I wanted to let her go live here. So first, let me introduce you to another friend that's in the studio here, Ashley Michelle, who Bill called, Lindsay Marie. Now, why did he do that? We don't know when Bill's not here to ask, but hi.
Hi. My name is Ashley Michelle Pappin, or as Bill liked to affectionately call me, Lindsay Marie. I don't know who Lindsay Marie is, but she certainly got around and did a lot of important things enough that Bill recognized her contributions to the community at large. Within a few minutes of meeting Eric, I was relaying a story to him where I told him, you know, your father never could get my name right. He'd always greet me as Lindsay Marie, and... as soon as I said that, Eric said, oh, I know who you are. My father loved you, but he never could get your name right. And it continues to be one of the most endearing aspects of Bill's legacy, I think, because he was a gentleman who really went out of his way to memorize everybody's name except for mine, which makes me the most special person of all.
Yes, I'm glad for that. I'm really glad to have you here in the studio with us. I have Lisa Courier of Crisis Care and Advocacy on the line with me. I want to welcome you, Lisa. Go ahead and say your piece about Bill if you want.
Well, just real quick, Chris, because I know you have a lot to get to. So my thing about Bill is Bill was an honest man. Bill spoke the truth, whether you agreed or not. And you can have a discussion, whether you agreed or not, and have a beer with him and a hug later. He loved everybody, whether he liked what you were doing or not. He, the biggest thing for me is that he was my dear friend, and he showed up. So not only did he give his Without a Roof, his writing in the paper, his radio shows, his podcast, he showed up for people. So not only did he promote them, but he also absolutely showed up. He loved his friends, and I can't tell you enough how much that he loved his children. So he always was speaking about Eric and Karina and, you know, and his bestie over there, Tammy. He showed up. He spoke his truth, and he was a man of integrity. Yeah. That's what I wanted to say about him.
Yeah, and I thank you for I know you and Bill, just to highlight your work a little, can you just give us an example? Like, I think last night you were talking about when you had to evacuate a parking lot of people who had lost their homes in the campfire.
After the fire, after the campfire, which was devastating for everybody. And there was a ton of people that were gathering in the Walmart parking lot and the parking lot at Lowe's. And the police had called me one night and said, tomorrow we're going to be evacuating the parking lot at Lowe's because we don't want everybody in the parking lot anymore. He says, we were wondering if you could go out before us, because I never wanted to go out with the police because I would lose my street cred with the people. And I had relationships, as did Bill, with all of these people. And we don't want to be, you know, showing up in a mixed context of what it was. And so that night I was crying, and I called Bill, and I said, hey, you know, I have a situation, and this is a situation, and I think the only person that can really help me with this is you. And so I called Bill and said, hey, can you go out with me tomorrow morning, and we'll go out before the police or before anybody working, and ask folks to move. Help them move, get them what they need to move, encourage them, and support wherever they're going to be going after that. And he said, absolutely. So at 5 in the morning, with coffee in hand, I picked up Bill Mash. And he always called me Lisa Courier. I picked up Bill Mash, and Bill Mash and I went around for 3 hours helping people move out of the Lowe's parking lot.
That's a beautiful story. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for calling in. I really appreciate you, as I hope you know. And listeners, if you want to call in, I think we're going to play another clip, and then Tammy Donaldson's going to speak. But the number here is 530-895-1114. And Lisa Courier, can you just really quickly tell us what your work is and how we can support?
Well, real quick is I own a nonprofit called Crisis Care Advocacy and Triage. And what we do is we help people when they're having a problem in their homes, whether they're homed or unhomed, de-escalate situations. We help them go to court. We spend a lot of time in the courtroom. We spend a lot of time at doctor's offices, taking people to doctor's offices. And we spend a lot of time sending food, groceries, waters, and things like that. And we want to help the people with mental illness, with homelessness and addiction on the streets of Butte County.
Thank you, Lisa. Peace to you.
Thank you.
All right, bye. All right, I want to play another Bill Mash piece because she talked about that episode with having to get people help before police moved in. And we last January, 2021, Bill was out there interviewing people before illegal police sweeps. So here, just want to give you this clip.
That was pretty cool how people giving out money, huh?
Yeah, I've never had that happen to me before. No. I like to give out money.
No.
I ain't that loaded. I give out $1 to each person, you know? I'm like, that's my limit.
Yeah, I don't have much money either. But two Christmases ago, 2019, I gave out 20 $2 bills.
Nice.
That's all I could afford. But a 20, blessings to her, huh?
Yeah.
I'm doing a little interview with KZFR. How important it is it to get nice. To get wholesome food out here?
Very important.
Yeah. How's your new year going, sir?
So far, it's going. Could be better. My new resolution is to get out of this situation.
Yeah, blessings. I hope you have the best of luck with that.
Right on, thank you. Have a good day.
She's doing a short little interview for KZFR down here near Annie's Glen. And how important is it to have people coming out here showing some love and giving you some food?
Honestly, it's really refreshing because we get pretty much, you know, all day almost, a bunch of people honking and ridiculing us. And, you know, it's just nice to be treated equal.
Yeah, because you are equal.
Yeah.
What's your situation, sir? How long have you been staying in this area?
A couple months. A
couple of months?
Yeah.
I know they came through, said you had to leave, then they said you don't have to leave. And the real story is that they've backed off because they're breaking the law.
Right.
You mean, what's your stance on this whole thing?
Honestly, it's just, it's kind of a confusing time for everybody, you know. We're trying to you know, we're trying to live comfortably, but at the same time, you know, live by everyone's rules, you know, the police's and everyone around us. But it makes it really difficult with COVID right now. You know, there's not very many choices we can go to. You know, the shelters are all full. We're not taking anybody else right now. So it makes it difficult.
Any closing comments?
Happy New Year.
It was really good seeing you.
Thank you,
my friend.
Appreciate it.
You got any comments about people coming out and showing some love and giving you some food?
We appreciate it. I mean, of course, it's definitely the opposite from everybody else. Usually is, ridicule and honking and yelling crap out their windows. But I don't know, it just reminds us that we're human, right?
Everyone's human. It's been a blessing. I've kind of semi-retired, but I was did a blog in journalism for 8 years called Without a Roof. And I've tried to tell folks, man, you want to have the most blessing time of your life is just come out and talk to people, yeah. Regardless of whether they're poor or rich or, you know, living in a tent. I mean, not only are we human, but there's some beautiful people out here.
It really is. I've met some of the most amazing people in my life on the street. They're just lost in addiction and, you know, broken homes and all that.
John, thanks for being on KZFR. But I'm trying to explain to people is, there's not even so much a cred, but people help each other so much that are out here in the same situation. Maybe there's a story you could share or add to that.
Well, I mean, there's something, a video I've seen that reminds me of that. People Less Give More showed, like, a man walking around, going up to people in a restaurant that are eating pizza and asking them, like, oh, I'm really hungry. You mind if I get a slice? And they're like, no, get away from me. But then they have one of the people with them hand a pizza to a homeless man. And then he walks up to that dude like, hey, man, I'm hungry. You think I get a slice? And he shared his food with him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just knowing where, you know what it's like. You tend to help out.
Did you meet the lady that was coming by with the 20s?
Yes, I did. I actually walked with her to make sure nobody took
it. Nice. That was amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was awesome.
Is there any way to describe for our listeners, you know, how amazing it is if you don't have much to get $20 on New Year's Day?
No, it absolutely is. I mean, that's all I can really say. It's awesome. It's definitely unexpected. We all appreciate it very much.
Thanks, John. It's good to meet you, man.
Yeah, me too, brother.
My name is Tina Marmol.
Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you today. Definitely. How's the situation been for you out here, ma'am? I know you were talking with my friend Addison in Lincoln.
It's been really super hard. It's been very difficult knowing that I graduated drug court 2 years ago and it's supposed to be the start of my life. And we had 3 national disasters and in 1 county. And most countries can even do claim 1. I don't think we ever got to grieve for the fire. I didn't. And it's really hurtful, but I want to be a positive impact out here. I mean, they've been through a lot worse than I have. And we just care about one another, and we look out for one another, and we really want to, you know, solve this problem. And we got some plans in the works, and I'm really hoping that people pull together, and we're going to move forward on this and make town council happy. Make the citizens happy and make ourselves happy, and we can all be a community, because that's where it starts, don't you think?
Yeah, it does. And I was talking with John, another campmate here, about how people stick together when you're down and out. What would you say to that?
They completely. It's like, yes. And yes, it really is. We were discussing that the other day, that people have one another's, you know, backs. They're concerned about one another. We make sure it's become the bartering system. You know, just who's got water, who's got some dog food, hey, you know, you got, you know, some butter for just whatever in the morning. And we all help one another, blankets, make sure that we have each other. And because we feel like lab rats, see that? When people walk by and just stare at us, we feel like we're behind the glass. But we accept it.
How much safer do you feel living in a camp like this that's somewhat managed? Because I had heard, and if you don't want this to be aired, it won't, but I heard you were jumped. You were talking about how you were attacked. That happens so often to females out here.
It does.
How much safer do you feel in a situation like this versus being rusted from one place to another?
Well, originally I started this tent to be just for girls only, just for women, just girls, so they had a safe place to go. And that's how Addison, he thought that was a great idea. And only allowed girls in there. There's no guys in there. Just until recently, because basically the girls never came over here because they'll just run and hide. Or they end up somewhere else. Like, but they come to me and they tell me how they've been assaulted. I was assaulted the other night, but, you know, just hit out of random for no reason because I didn't have a cigarette, you know, on camera, you know, in front of Bubbles. Not one person came to help me. There was like 20 people out there. She was 23. I'm a senior citizen. And I didn't have my dog with me. But there's a lot of girls and women out here, they're really scared. Really scared. So they're starting to band together if they can. But we have a lot of gentlemen that have stepped up and look out for the girls too. So there's some positive, real positive, that they stand up and they'll walk on and say, no, you can't stay here, you know. You're bothering this girl, you're doing this and that. We really try not to let any abuse go on at all of women here. We just don't tolerate it. It's not acceptable.
Not to speak for everyone, but maybe to speak for yourself. How comfortable are you even calling the police to say, I was assaulted? Were they going to do anything or any comments on that?
I mean, I think the police department is doing an amazing job now, but I remember a day when they're real good at coming out. You call them, they come out somehow, they turn it around on you, and they're taking you to jail. You're like, hey, what's going on, you know? And then a lot of people have that, you know, don't tell, this and that. I'm a firm believer in sometimes you have to tell if your car's been stolen or if your granny's, you know, getting hurt upstairs, you got to call. So I don't believe in that because drug court taught me that. Heather, especially, taught me that. It's not okay. It's okay to call the police, you know? It's okay to call the police sometimes if it's a dangerous situation.
But you said the police are doing an amazing job. So what are they doing so well as far as your situation?
They're not treating us like crap anymore that I've seen. No, they're not. They treat us with respect. That I've seen, real respect. They talk to us like human beings, and I've walked up and thanked them for that. I've been kind of spokesman over here for some of them in the morning, you know? I look out, and I'm like, okay, it's time to go out. And I talked to them, and they've been amazing. They've been real helpful, real knowledgeable, telling us what's going on at all stages of the game. You know, I haven't seen them harass anybody, throw nothing. Nothing like they used to be.
So you're talking about this specific area, yes, that situation here. Do you think it has a lot to do with the fact that this is somewhat a sanctioned camp and people are doing the best they can and the police don't feel this pressure to kind of go in there and rouse people?
Maybe. Totally. I mean, actually, they're starting to follow the law. I mean, a lot. Even the Constitution, some of them. Because I called them out on it. Because, you know, I took political science, and I was, like, really impressed. I go, when did you guys start following the Constitution? Like, it's a good thing. But I've had experiences with them outside of here since I've been here, and they've been most amazing. All of them. Every Chico BD that I've come in contact with has been completely amazing. You know, helped me, and, you know, I've been in different situations helping people out, and they were just very cordial and very polite and respectful. They really were.
Maybe a good closing comment would be, how important it is to treat people like fellow human beings and just like I am.
Yes.
I mean, just talking with you and just enjoying every second of it. How important is that for people out
there? I would say that because, remember, everyone's just two paychecks away from being right here, too. Mm-hmm. You know? We're not freaks. We're not, you know, ugly people. We're just poor and broke and in a bad situation. Some for different reasons and some for other reasons, you know?
Out of the hundreds of times I've been out on the streets in 8 years, maybe thousands, I could kind of say, you know, now I know why Jesus hung out with the poor people, because you people are cool, right?
That's I agree. I say that all the time. I said that last week. If Jesus was here, he'd be kicking it with us. He would be hanging out. He would. He would. And everyone agreed with that. It's true. Yes, he would.
It was nice to meet you.
Thank you. It was nice to meet you.
And
that's Dakota.
Dakota? Do you got anything for the cat? He's going to eat my cat. I've never had someone snap. They're not snap. He didn't snap. He thought it was food. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Sean, what do you got? What's it say? It says, faith.
Hebrews 11:1.
Faith, Hebrews 11:1. That's a tattoo on your left forearm.
Yep.
All right. No wonder you lit up when I was talking about Jesus hanging around with poor people.
Yes, Hebrews 11:1 is, faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Love thy neighbor. We have to.
Love thy neighbor.
That's what this
is. As they sow. You just heard from Gina Marmel, a senior citizen living houseless in the encampments off Pine Street in Chico near the entrance to Bidwell Park. Thank you, Gina, and all of your neighbors for sharing your insights and feelings on living destitute in public space, subject to harassment, assault, robbery, and vigilante acts by people brazenly trumpeting law and order.
All right, Guillermo Mash, in his own words, bless him, bless him, bless him. I have in the studio with me another wonderful person, and she is Shirley McCoy. She's our office manager here. She's our office manager here, and she wanted to say something. I cut my own mic off too quick. Go ahead, Shirley.
Hi there, everyone. I'm Shirley. I'm the office assistant here at KZFR, as Chris said, and I just wanted to come back to say a quick little something about Guillermo. He interviewed me, my first interview here at KZFR, which I was real nervous the first time and kind of sparked. Now I've been doing this more and more, and you could say Guillermo kind of helped me to get comfortable on the mic and get comfortable talking to people. Me and him always talked about mutual love of the blues, and I remember going to Nash's blues jam with him, and he was sharing with me all the cool stories about getting to go to the Sacramento Blues Festival and things like that. And just this last week, I think that was on Wednesday, I was at a friend's blues show, and I think I had talked to Guillermo about checking him out sometime with me. And you know, I was sitting there before the show started, and actually a Buddy Guy song that Guillermo had sent to me came on, and you know, I started to think about it in that moment, and maybe that was Guillermo showing up even after he was gone to, you know, let me know he was there in spirit. So gonna really miss that guy, and I know everyone else is really gonna miss him, and big loss for us all. So
Yeah, Shirley, thank you. Thank you so much for that and for bringing in that other part of Bill, which, you know, here on the Peace and Justice Show, I know all this, not all of it, but some of it, and I hope other programmers will do tributes also so that more about Bill can go over our airways so we can really, really embrace him in his totality. So I wanted to get back to a little bit about the bigness of Bill. And Tammy Donaldson has been creating a kind of a compendium of, it's not complete, of course, but she started on it. I wanted her to be able to list off some of these Bill-related things. Go ahead, Tammy.
Hi. Bill is everywhere. Everywhere. Someone compared him to a tree with a bunch of branches. This is an interactive list. I started, just kind of got it rolling. You can access it on Guillermo Mash's page. I said, let's play a game. Can we possibly list everything that Bill Guillermo Mash has been involved with and supported? I'll start. There's KZF, and maybe as we're doing this, if you think of something, maybe you can call in and we can add it. I envision this as a giant scroll, like a really, really long scroll. There's KZFR, of course, and this one has a ton of subcategories, this show being one of them for sure. Youth for Justice, which was not just a radio show, but an actual physical program over at the Chico Peace and Justice Center, and something very dear to his heart. He figured that if we address the issues of the youth now, we won't have homelessness in 20 years. There was the Poor People's Palooza, which was a hoot. That was wonderful and so much fun. Without a roof, of course. The Chico Vibe. Bill was a huge music lover and a supporter. Someone called him Chico's Hype Man, and I think that's really accurate. He was involved at Chico Peace and Justice Center and kind of instigated a few other things out of there, one of which kind of morphed into a Safe Space Winter Shelter, which he always remained involved with. Something about Bill is he didn't actually, he was an actual technical member of any organizations, I don't think. I don't think he ever sat on a board, never had a business card, certainly not in this realm. But he was involved with everything. I think he started half of the good things in this town. The Hunger Trolley, Bill was right there. He was involved with Veterans Stand Down here in Chico and in Sacramento and in Redding. Addison Winslow's campaign, of course. He loved and adored Addison and knew that he was really good for us. The local punk music scene. These are comments that I'm reading. So this list has been contributed to by everyone, and maybe you can contribute to it as well. The local punk scene, all music, really. 7th Street Center and Mainsail. The 7th Street Center was the art workshop and gallery for Mainsail clients. And if you don't know about that, you should go check it out. A comrade in the fight against climate change. A friend that used his talents to give a voice to climate change refugees, the homeless and those forgotten. Signs formerly against and now inspiring humanity. Ken Smith said he's been doing columns for the Chico News Review for a few months. Imagining community. There's some really good content there. Really a great stuff. Sojourner's House on the Ridge. Bill was more expansive than Chico. He was involved with the shelter up there and various projects for our unhoused neighbors that weren't in Chico. He was involved in Oroville as well. Kentfield Gardens. Bill loved the garden, and he liked to use it for a meeting place for his who knows what he was up to. Migrant Clinicians Network, which I think we're going to hear about in a minute. Bernie Sanders campaign. Here we go. North Valley Housing Trust, 100th Monkey Community Cafe, the Hope Center in Oroville, Food Distributions, Writing for Donuts with Josh Indar, Facing Homelessness Page, Art on the Plaza with Tatiana Allen, Signs Against Humanity, the Campfire, Walmart Outreach. Chat, he was a friend to so many of the founders and core chat folks. They're all going to miss him greatly. Butte Water Watch, Chico Food Not Bombs, No on Butte County Gerrymandering, Chico Red Meals, again Addison Winslow's campaign, Wildfire Relief Group of Butte County, Women's March, Chico Certified Farmers Market, KZFR, of course, Deborah Lucero, Friends of the Arts, Upstate Community Enhancement Foundation, Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, and Chico Bike Party, who I believe did a memorial ride for him recently. Foothill Hikers. He loved nature and the outdoors, and that was a big part of his life. And I was excited to see him exploring that more in the last couple of years. Butte Environmental Council, Block Party with a Purpose, Without a Roof Humboldt Justice Tour. He was also involved with Deborah Carey and that crew out there in Humboldt. They had a lot of fun together. Someone said he made time to promote my music and my story on KZFR. Justice for Desmond. Justice for Desmond was very dear to him. David was much beloved by Bill, and we need to keep doing Bill stuff, and that's on the top of a list. Burritos for Everyone. He attended a few CC4J meetings. Chico Housing Action Team. Went to the hospital to check on those without roofs. He did. Bill didn't live too terribly far from Enloe, and I don't think it would have mattered if he did live far. He cared, and he went just to be there, just to be present with people a lot. Homeward Street Journal. Catalyst. And Chris wanted to remark the one thing I want to remark about is how proximate he was for the voices of the unheard, and that's kind of the essence of Bill, in my opinion. Shelter interviews in all of Butte County. He helped motivate and promote every agency and group helping the homeless, including crisis care advocacy and triage. Home and Heart. Bill interviewed Sierra Schmidt on the radio for the first time ever. He really believed in the very, very good work that Home and Heart are doing. And he liked Sierra Schmidt a whole lot. Everyone does. Allie Matters Light Night offered Friends of Machupta. Sunrise Movement, Chico. Blackbird Bookstore and Cafe. House Keys Not Handcuffs with Paul Bowden. He supported Safe Park all the way out in Tucson. And then again, Writing for Donuts with Josh Indar. This isn't a complete list. There's no way it is. So let's keep adding it. It's going to be a big, long scroll. Thank you.
Thanks, Tammy Donaldson. You're wonderful. And I appreciate so much what you've been doing. You know, Ashley Michelle, you wanted to talk just a little bit about your connection with Bill and how the Migrant Clinicians Network, how he helped you amplify the work that you're doing. And just a sec here. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Chris. I think the most important aspect of Guillermo Mash's legacy, beyond being a father to two amazing, wonderful kids, is that he prided the opportunity to tell stories, specifically elevating those stories of people that didn't traditionally or typically have the pathway to give those voices the attention, the media, the audience that they deserved. And with the nonprofit that I work for, Migrant Clinicians Network, we are a 501c3 public health nonprofit that provides support services to frontline clinicians engaged in the exclusive treatment, care, and management of migrant and mobile populations. So Bill really appreciated what we do, even though the thrust of our work takes place at the national level, specifically the border. But about 2 years ago, we received a grant that allowed us to take a group of migrant women and youths and teach them how to take digital photographs to tell the stories of their lives and in the manner in which they wish to tell them. And Bill was one of the first people I approached to get support for the project. I made the mistake of asking him directly for money, which anyone who knows Bill knows you don't ask him for money because he lived so far off the grid, he didn't even use a bank. And his response to me was, well, Lindsay Marie, I'm broke, but my friends aren't, so we'll get this figured out. And sure enough, we did. In fact, he helped network me with a number of local businesses and restaurants in particular to support this project so that in addition to getting cameras donated completely to the project, we also were able to feed our participants. As it turned out, we scored almost $40,000 of in-kind donations over the course of this two-year project because it turns out knowing Bill Mash is better than having an international credit card. And I will forever be grateful to him for bringing attention to this project, allowing these kids to tell their stories and these women to tell their stories and get it elevated to another level. I think it's been one of the most positive things to come out of Butte County, particularly since the fire and certainly since the pandemic. And I know that he really enjoyed seeing the exhibit over at the Vaylene L. Smith Museum when it was hosted last year, which showcased all these images that these migrant women and children took telling their stories in a really evocative, meaningful, and ultimately powerful way. And every time I saw him after that, he would ask me, how are my kids doing? How are my people doing? And he was referring to the participants because he felt like he knew them on a different level. That was the power of the exhibit, but it was also the power of Bill Mash and his ability to not only tell stories, but unify people in a compelling way. I know that we at MCN are very sad for his loss and that our local Chico imprint will never be the same without him. So on behalf of MCN, I would just like to say, Bill, thank you for supporting us and we will miss you forever.
I really appreciate that, and I want to get you back on really soon to talk about your project. And, you know, we're going to run out of time, which always happens, but I wanted to get Eric Mash back on the line to talk about his dad and see if he has been having any reflections since hearing the clip and what Tammy said and what Ashley said. What's going on in your head right now?
That's kind of a big question, I guess. It's been a rough past week or so, week and a half at this point, almost 2 weeks, since hearing what happened to my dad. But in that time, I have come to realize and appreciate the kind of person that he was. I unfortunately wasn't able to have that kind of relationship with him as much as I wish I would have, and see like all of the amazing things that he's done. I mean, I was there the day that he told me and my sister, standing in our living room of his apartment, that he had a new project, and his new project was to combat homelessness. It's like, okay, that's cool, that's great, Dad. Little did we know what that meant. What that meant was that he was going to give up his apartment and he was going to walk, hitchhike, do the homeless thing all the way up Northern California. You know, and at the time he didn't know that Chico is where he was going to land, but he did that. He lived the homeless life. Like, he slept in a sleeping bag with no tent. He slept in, you know, with a tent. He did everything but panhandled. And in that time, he got a great appreciation for what it was to be homeless and what it was to be in that mindset. And I think that just pays tribute to the kind of person that he was, that he didn't want to just hear the story about it. He wanted to live it, empathize and sympathize with it, know exactly what that was like. Obviously, you know, depending on the story, that's not possible, but he was always a loving and caring person, and he loved and cared about everybody. And, like, the thing about him is that he may not like you, but he loved you. And I don't know how he did it, but he knew everybody's name. He knew every single person's name, first and last, and he would introduce you to everybody. This is blah and blah, their first and last name, and they're so-and-so's wife or girlfriend or mother or whatever. He knew everybody, and I don't know how he kept it straight, but, like, that's just who he was. Now, he cared so much about everybody that everybody was his family, that he just, from sun up to sign down, he would just wake up early in the morning. He would be writing. He would be doing these things. And he would just hop on his bike. That's something that hasn't been mentioned yet. He did all of these things with all these organizations, with all these people, on a bicycle. He just got on a bike and went. And he was just everywhere, all at once. And just hearing all the stories, I just don't know how he did it. And even before he had a bike, he would just walk. He was adamant that he would not drive anywhere, and he stuck to it for 10 years. I swear he drives. He knows how to drive, I promise. But on that day when he said that, oh, you know, we're going to, my new project is to combat homelessness, that he has not sat in a single driver's seat for those 10 years. And it's amazing to me. Hearing all the stories and all the people that he's touched and all the people's names that he remembers and all the organizations he was involved in, all the things that he started and all the things that, like, that he just was so passionate about. And the thing that just, like, amazes me is that, like was said earlier, he wasn't like an actual member of any of it. He helped found this thing, and then, all right, I'm done with this thing, onto this thing. And he was always just project after project after project, and he was so passionate about each and every one of them, you know. And because of it, he's left this massive legacy that is hopefully going to be able to be upheld. I don't know how he did it. You know, at his remembrance that we had last night, you know, people were coming up to me, and they're twice his age, and they don't know how he possibly did it, you know, how he possibly was able to do all of this on a bicycle, like, was able to find the motivation to get up and to go and to do all of these things for all of these people.
So, Eric, I want you to, I really appreciate what you just said, but you brought up something in my mind about how he did get wheels when he needed wheels, and she's sitting right off to your right, and it's Tom Lee. And can you pass the mic and have that right near your mouth, Tom, and tell us about a story about when Bill needed wheels.
Hi. So I met Bill probably about 2014, and I met him through, I think, Without a Roof podcast or Facebook page, and I messaged him one day, said, do you need help? And he said, yes, I actually do. I need some wheelchairs for some folks living on the streets. And I said, well, I happen to be affiliated with a nonprofit that has wheelchairs. So I picked him up in his apartment. I had never met him before. And we went off to get these wheelchairs. And from then, because he knew that I had a car, I get these messages through Facebook Messenger. Hey, I need a ride to downtown. And so that was happening for years. And one time, he had me take him somewhere with somebody that was needed a place to go, you know, like tour shelter or something like that. And I said, sure, I will take the person, but you have to accompany me because I'm not doing this by myself. And he's like, sure. So, and we've taken, also our biggest adventure was, I was working in Oroville, and he knew that. And he said, hey, and he would call me my first and last name, Tom Lee, like this. And so he called me up and said, or he messaged me and said, you need to help me take donations from Oroville to Chico. I said, okay, sure. Well, I didn't realize there's 150 pounds of donations in my little sedan I had at the time. And he didn't have a bike back then. And so somehow he made it to Oroville. And I said, I can't give you a ride. I'm going to work every morning at 8 a.m. He goes, that's okay. I'll make it there. I don't know how he made it there, but it was there. And he would accompany back to Chico and distribute the donations. I don't know how, because I didn't help him with that, but he did it. And every week we went back and just did this. And he got nonprofits, and this is just the way. I mean, he lives the life of somebody that wants to better the community. So he had these ideas of so many projects, but I remember he was really into youth, homeless youth, and so he really helped Sixth Street. And then he even started another center, in the Peace and Justice Center, for them. And so one of the things he had me do was get those rolls from the Chico ER, the end rolls, and I would bring them there. So that was the way, you know, because it was hard for him to cart a lot of this stuff around. So I would help him bring things around. And finally he did get a cart, and so he started carting things around, and he did art in the plaza and started carting things from his. So there was all these projects, and I can't remember half of them, but it was always, and then he and I organized Poor People's Palooza 2 years in a row. And that was basically a festival celebrating homeless youth and artists, and but mixing it all together. And he made it sure that no one really knew who was homeless and who wasn't homeless. So he had artists that, you know, from the local high schools come in and do spoken word. He had people draw, and we blew up posters and stuck them around the room. He had youth from the local high schools volunteer. I mean, he was just amazing in getting the community together. And we had his Without a Roof presentation. We showed it to the community. Very powerful, very moving. But one of the things that he is in a former life was he was a project manager for HP, and that side of him came out when we did events together. So 1:30 in the morning, I get these texts 2 days before the event. Hey, Tom Lee, can you do XYZ? And I said, no, Bill, I'm going to sleep right now. We're not doing another thing at 1 in the morning. Nothing's changing. But his heart was so big, and for years he would message me and say, I'm starting a new organization, or I'm in this new organization, you should check it out. I'm so excited about somebody I just met. I'm so excited with all these community leaders in the community are doing.
Thank you, Tom Lee. And I want to thank all the guests today that have made this show possible. And I want to go out with another clip from Bill himself, so you can hear his voice, hear his work, and hopefully you'll be inspired to say to yourself, what would MASH do, you know, and start doing it yourself. And I also wanted to make one more comment about what Tom Lee said, that, you know, as a programmer myself and a kind of awkward one, I really admire his work and expertise that went into the professional quality of his interviews, all the editing and mastering. And one show would often have at least six or more segments requiring hours of interviews and editing. And he made it sound fun, and he made it look so effortless. And here, I just want to give you another example of that before we leave you. And please stay tuned for Playing Dead. And here is from January of 2021, during that bleak, bleak winter when people were being ousted from Bidwell Park.
Give me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor? 1 week of their life, 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago, and a year ago I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there, when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own beds, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence.
So ich verstehe,
welcoming you to a special anniversary reflection of the premiere of the KZFR Without a Roof radio program 6 years ago. We opened the show with We Twist It Up, as performed by Charlie in the KZFR studios in July of 2016. Charlie and her young daughter have fallen again on hard times, a cycle of poverty pain that traps so many of our neighbors. Help Charlie by helping anyone you see in need, even if it's just a kind word and a pleasant hello. Our show this evening is inspired by a dear person who just came into my real world. Right out of the chute, she told me I had indirectly inspired her way back in 2013 when she was without a roof and living in the Sabbath House. Although her story was one of destitute addiction and childhood trauma, she proudly overcame it all. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. It was so magnificent to bear witness to her happily beaming proudness. Clean and sober for years and raising a teenager, she has a long-standing and well-paying job that fills not only her cupboards, but her soul. We start our reflections with remembering Harley Young. Tough one. As aired in January 2017 on the Without a Roof radio program, as a segue into our song dedication this evening, The A-Team by Ed Sheeran. Been a rough few days for me. You know, I've been working, texting with a mom of a young lady that's pretty far along in the pregnancy, looking for a home. I physically had to do a code red, code pink to a servants agency on a situation I thought I had to report. I know someone that's driving around, has been driving around trying to find shelter for a 4 or 5 year old unaccompanied youth. And this, police say a 20-year-old woman was found dead Sunday morning outside the Chico Area Recreation and Park District on Valambrosia Avenue. The woman appeared to have died from a drug overdose, police said. The Butte County Coroner's Office identified the woman as Harley Young of Chico. This is from the Chico Enterprise Record. I knew Harley, and I have since she was a runaway on the streets of Chico. I let her couch surf several times and showed her the best way I knew and could that I cared. It pained me every time I saw her, particularly so the time I consoled her the morning after she was viciously assaulted, bruised, battered, and hiding her face. I chose to remember Harley the morning I brought her coffee in the jungle when she was a runaway and how grateful she was. We hugged, we had a bond, and I'm devastated. Bless everyone that loved and cared for her the best way they knew and the best way they could. Since 8.
So the angels are flying, and that was Ed Sheeran. It was embedded in a piece that Bill Mash did, and I forgot it was there, but it was certainly beautiful. I want to thank you for listening to the Peace and Justice program today. I urge you to listen to the archives that Bill left behind, and they are many, and they are wonderful. So Without a Ruth, Youth for Justice, The Chico Vibe, and Imagining Community can all be found at kzfr.org /shows, and just put in those words. So anyway, we'll be back with you next Friday. I want you to stay tuned for Playing Dead and for your Friday to unspool, relax, and kick back from all the traumatic things that have been happening, and love to you all. And I want to thank our underwriters, of course. Quicksilver Courier Service, established in 2010. Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services for private individuals, as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service, and by the North State Symphony, performing Holiday Pops December 9th, 10th, and 11th. This concert showcases a wide range of holiday music, everything from Nutcracker to Jingle Bells, including a sing-along for the audience and a featured performance by soloist Don Weiss. More information and tickets at northstatesymphony.org. And let's get the community calendar up for you guys. Let's see, where did it go? Here it is. Hang on one sec. I just want to say, too, we're going to have a special vigil on December 10th in recognition of the 75th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights. And you can come to the corner of 3rd and Main Street in downtown Chico between 12:30 and 1:30. And please join us, and let's stand up for human rights. Here we go.
Because I was on heroin really bad, and I found out really quickly where to stay and where not to stay. I was sexually assaulted in downtown Chico.
All right, well, that's not good. Hang on, folks. I'm going to see if I can get this one to stop. And those were the part of the Bill Mash interviews. Now I want to get up here. Let's see. Maybe Ray should help me, because I am dorking out here. Oh, stop button. Okay, thanks, Ray. All right, here we go.
It's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Mark Baker. Tonight is the first night of the Stansberry Home Victorian Christmas Celebration from 6 to 9 p.m. Come and enjoy spice cider, homemade cookies, entertainment, and Victorian decorations with a special visit from Santa. The Stansberry Home is located at the corner of 5th and